he went to ask something to you, but first he went to finish one book.
Huh?
No, afterwards I want to come again and ask you some questions. But later, you know?
When?
When I finish a book.
We're going to play two more.
You're writing a book?
No, no. I'm reading.
Reading a book. Oh, what book are you reading? Well, you know, I don't want to do any offense,
yes.
But you may not be knowing, but Anantaras Pandit does have a bad habit of blaspheming Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada too.
Oh, really?
So for persons who are interested in maintaining their loving attachment to Srila Prabhupada and his sampradaya, it's best not to go to Anantaras Pandit.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, Srila Prabhupada told to Padmalochan. Padmalochan was the first one who came out with a book about Brajmandal Prakram called Chintamani Dham. So when he was compiling that book, he was going hither and thither to gather information from here and there and different people. And Prabhupada personally instructed, according to Padmalochan, who told me, the Prabhupada personally instructed him not to go to Anantaras Pandit. Anantaras Pandit evidently was first initiated by Ananta Vasudev, who was a defector from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He admits that his first contact with Krishna consciousness was Jiva Dharma, but then he rejected the book, saying that there were certain aspects of what Bhaktivinoda Thakur presented in Jiva Dharma which was not accepted by the Siddha Pranali Sampradayak Mahants that he was currently associated with.
Is any person in Radhakunda to
approach?
To associate with? I don't know. I really don't know.
I go all the time, but when I go.
Well, Mahanandi Swami also sometimes advocates to go to Anantaras Pandit. But the thing is that it's clearly stated in Sri Krishna Bhajanamrita by Narahari Sarikar that one should not go to hear, even if he's an elevated Vaishnava, or you might think that he's an elevated Vaishnava, but if he's, let's say, critical of your guru, you should not hear from him.
Mm.
So therefore, I prefer not to hear from an Anantaras Pandit.
Okay.
Personally. I have one book that was given to me, Vilakkushamanjali, with his commentaries in it, but I don't particularly derive any useful information from his commentaries to start with that I couldn't get from just investigating the scriptures myself. So why put ourselves in the position of becoming obliged to someone who is against our Guru Varga, claiming that our Guru Varga is Appa Sampradaya, claiming that we have no bona fide Diksha Sampradaya, proclaiming. Due to his misinformation. He doesn't accept that we have a bona fide Guru Parampara, and he blasphemes Bhaktisiddhanta, saying things like, who is he to claim to be Acharya? Stuff like that. And saying in slight praise of Prabhupada to ISKCON devotees who've gone over to him, that, oh, Prabhupada has done good by your following Prabhupada, you gain enough Sukriti to come to get the real thing from me. Because the real thing is not, you know. So why hear from such a person?
I didn't know this stuff.
Yeah, that's the problem, is many devotees don't know this stuff. They're not familiar with what goes on in his ashram. All kinds of illicit sex, all kinds of garbage goes on in his ashram. Homosex, everything. And he's incapable of controlling it. So I've heard from ISKCON devotees who were close to me, who left us to go there to get something more wonderful, supposedly. So steer clear. My advice is steer clear.
Okay.
I do have Radharasa Sudhanidhi and Vilapa Kosmanjali, but I don't read the commentaries. I just read the
Tamil. Anyway, we have them from our ISKCON devotees. They've produced Radharasa Sudhanidhi.
Yes, yes.
Yes, from Dasra Sutta. We don't need to hear from
them. Sometimes you find people like this, for example, then explain very sweet the pastimes and everything, but I understand. My question is, if people make aparad, how can write in this kind of way, like sweet, and
they can put the impression.
Anyone can put on a show.
Like movies.
Anyone can?
Like movies.
Oh.
I don't want to criticize him in any way, but if he's critical of Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta, then I want to have nothing to do with him. Even Advaita, who's translated several different books, I don't want to have anything to do with him. Because Advaita is the one who's translated, but Advaita personally told to Mahanini Swami that he purposefully edited out the criticisms of Bhaktisiddhanta and others that were in the commentaries of Anantadas Pandit in order to make it more suitable for the presentation to his paying audience, namely the ISKCON devotees. Purposely edited out his criticisms. Because if the criticisms were not edited out, the ISKCON devotees wouldn't have anything to do with it. So therefore, in order to catch the pocketbook of the ISKCON devotees who were naive, he edited things out to make Anantadas appear to be more appreciable by the ISKCON devotees. I never met Anantadas Pandit. I saw him from a distance only once when I went to Radhakund one time. And, you know, hari hari bol. It's not that I'm not going to go back to Godhead if I don't get through the Pranali Diksha from Anantadas Pandit.
Okay.
You recorded that? Anyway, that's not good. That wasn't meant to get out. That's a personal conversation between me and him.
No, well,
you should delete that conversation.
Yeah, I didn't came here to. I just asked him. I didn't know this stuff. Somebody told me that when he gives you diksha, he reveals your mandari.
Yeah, all these things.
Yeah, all these things, and then you can perform.
How's that going to be immediately?
But you know, if you're not chanting Shuddha Nam, where is that going to get you? If you're not chanting Shuddha Nam, then the fact of the matter is that any perception of reality that you're going to have is abhas.
Okay.
You're not going to be able to have the pure perception of your own sarup even. What to speak of even the pure perception of Krishna? If you're not chanting Shuddha Nam, you're not actually seeing the deity for what the deity is. Your seeing is a semblance of seeing. It's not real seeing. Vishaya Chadiya Shuddha Habiman. So unless your heart is purified from material contamination, at least relatively purified, because you're not completely purified of all anarthas until you get your spiritual body, but even to get the conception of the spiritual body, generally from the stage of asakti, according to some, but Vishwanath says from nishta. From nishta, and Srila Prabhupada also says from anartha nivritti, meaning, you know, the threshold of nishta, that one can become, at that point, when one is freed from material contamination, one can eagerly follow in the footsteps. Eagerly means with lobha, genuine lobha.
I ask you the same question last time.
No, you asking who is sadhu?
Nowadays, how can I find that, where is the sadhu? No.
It's basically the same principle.
Sincerity.
Yeah. How do you know? You'll know when you know.
This anartha nivritti is up till it.
What is knowledge? Knowledge means cognizance. Cognizance means chit shakti. So when you're sufficiently endowed with chit shakti, then you'll be able to know. Before that time, and not only that, but when Krishna lifts the veil of yoga maya and reveals the things as they are to you, then you can know.
Anartha nivritti, it remains up to the stage of bhava?
No, anartha nivritti remains up to the stage when you're completely freed from any tinge of materiality in your existence. Just like the gopis who were locked in their rooms, they had not completed their anartha nivritti. They were in the lilas of the Lord. They were hearing Krishna's flute. They were desiring to go for rasa dancing, but they were locked in their rooms. Why? Because they didn't have a spiritual body. To not have a spiritual body, to not have the fully actuated spiritual body with which to express the highest degree of prema, mahabhav.
So if the gopis not have an option, then why is that
in
the stage of bhava also one can fall down?
Yes, it can be.
So the anathas are still remaining.
Yeah, there's some. If you've read Madhurya Kadambini, then you should know the answer to this question. Have you read Madhurya Kadambini yet?
Long time.
So then you read it again. You obviously didn't understand what you were reading. All the answers are there. Four different classes of anarchists and the different stages at which different degrees of those different classes of anarchists are eliminated.
So you get the spiritual rupa when you are free from all the anarchists. But we have a dilemma. This fall down of the spirit soul. I agree with the Tathasta Shakti, we fall down and we decide, but we never been there.
That's what you think.
Yeah. That's why I'm talking about it here. So you can see.
What they don't know is that before they were in that Tathasta Lok, they were in the leaders of the Lord.
Before?
Tathasta Shakti is always Tathasta Shakti. When you go back home, back to Godhead, you're still going to be Tathasta Shakti. But you'll be endowed with Swarup Shakti. But the point is that Krishna cannot be confined within the grip of our fist. You cannot know the absolute truth in toto. Therefore, even though he's changeless, he can change. Even though things are impossible, he, by his own sweet will, can make the impossible possible. You have to grant him that, because he is inconceivable. Achintya Shakti.
The question is, we will or will not we?
What difference does it make ultimately? The only difference that I see,
yeah.
The only difference in terms of the psychological impact that information has on an individual in this present position, is that if we weren't with him, then it means that we weren't that foolish. But if we were with him, then it means that we were really foolish. So better to accept the position that we were really foolish in order to become the object of the mercy of Dinadayal. Better to accept the psychological effect of the impact of the information that perhaps, maybe, we were there. And if we were there, then what kind of fools were we to give that most unlimitedly beautiful thing up to come to play God in this material world? In other words, coming to the material world to pass salmon and to pass stool in an attempt to play God. As if that's what God does, you know, all day and night is pass salmon and pass stool. What kind of fools are we? Whereas if we want to say that we were simply manifest from Mahavishnu, forcibly glanced at Pradhan for the very purpose of impregnating the material energy in order to create a material world as a black background for Krishna's beatific leelas to be contrastingly manifest upon for his own delight, and we were for the purpose of making that facility for him to enjoy in that way by being glanced out forcibly with hardly a chance of being able to make a choice between light and dark. 99.9% of the souls who are glanced at the material energy succumb to the influence of the material energy, attraction to Maya, thinking that he can be the husband of that energy, or the enjoyer of that energy, or the controller, etc. So that insufficient chit-shakti in such a position of imperfection, how can you be blamed, practically, for his arrangement? So therefore, it's not my fault that I came here, really. Okay, admittedly, I could have chosen between light and dark, you know, but how was I to know what I was getting myself into?
Govinda Maharaj explained, if you don't have a guru who explained to you the real Siddha Deha, it's like no bona fide guru or something like that. So I don't know which.
So my question is, did Govinda Maharaj ever explain to any of his disciples about what their Siddha Deha was?
No.
Even to date, in any dreams or anything?
I don't know all the details.
Yeah, so then?
But clearly you see when you read these books and hear the classes, is some Baba is there.
That's okay, but also I have differences with certain of his opinions about certain things.
For example?
Peacock feather emoji coming to start with.
Huh? Peacock feather
emoji coming.
Pluma de pavo real in Señor Chaitanya.
Oh, it says in Gorema they don't put peacock feather emoji.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Not only that, but he has his own exposition of the reasons why
devotees more, bhaktas more.
So how is wearing a peacock feather going to change his mood?
That will change it.
How?
That is Krishna.
Huh?
Krishna.
Who? What?
Mahaprabhu was in the mood of Radharani.
So peacock feather means what?
That's what I read, you know. That
yeah, so?
it gives, gives a lot, is the enjoyer, because Mahaprabhu was in Australia.
Because if he wears the peacock feather, then it means that he's supposed to be in the mood of Krishna.
Yeah.
So my question is, that when Radharani wears a peacock feather, is she Krishna?
Yeah, Radharani wears peacock feathers. And he's wearing
and also Subal wears peacock feathers, and different so many different devotees wear peacock feathers. So when the devotees wear peacock feathers, does it mean that they're a Krishna and they can't think of themselves as a devotee of Krishna? Or does it mean that when they wear the peacock feathers, that they're absorbed in the ecstasy of being Krishna conscious? That she's wearing peacock feathers in her braids to remind her of her lover Krishna?
Gaudiya, they don't wear peacock feathers.
Huh?
Gaudiyaman, they don't put peacock feathers.
That's their business. Yeah. But Srila Prabhupada instructed to put peacock feather on Lord Chaitanya for the purpose of addressing the issue that Krishna is manifesting in Kali Yuga as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to preach that principle to the world. So for someone to come along as a disciple of Srila Prabhupada and try to deprecate Srila Prabhupada's instructions on the matter, saying that it's incorrect, then I have some issue with that. I sent a message back to Gaurgovinda Maharaj that, okay, if you want to say that putting a peacock feather is going to remind him that he's Krishna, then you should better stop offering tulsi leaves to his feet. Because the tulsi leaves are accepted by Vishnu Sattva. Radharani's not accepting the tulsi leaves on the feet. So if he's in Radhabhava and you're putting tulsi leaves on the feet, then he's going to say, Adi, what are you doing? Don't you know I'm Radharani? Or can you understand also that Mahaprabhu is exhibiting a myriad of bhavas?
Okay. Even Lord Shiva.
Myriad means many varieties.
Oh.
Sometimes he's in the mood of Krishna. So certainly if he's in the mood of Krishna, he can wear a peacock feather. But even if he's in the mood of Radha, he can wear a peacock feather. In the mood of Radha, liking to circumstantially wear a peacock feather. Because Radha wears peacock feathers too.
Another thing also he says that and Prabhupada says Jagannath becomes sick, and he says that that is wrong. And Jagannath actually, they are, you know, repented and is accepted. In his book, I read the issue that Jagannath became sick, what Prabhupada says in CC.
Yeah.
And he says that, oh, that is wrong. But Jagannath is repented, as mentioned in Padma Purana, whatever he quotes in his Thanks of Separation. Embarkment of Separation, that book. It means
he's repainted?
Yeah, repainted. Huh? And so that's why he's kept there secretly, but the people, they take it as he's becoming a sick, but he's not actually sick.
Anyway, you know, are you going to be in the Bob or not? You know, the Bob is that he's sick.
Yeah, the Bob is sick.
You know, it's like, who cares what the reality of what it is? The whole idea is to make them not feel the pain that Lord Jagannath experiences or the pain that the devotee sympathetically experiences by Jagannath's eyes being scraped off and stuff, you know, in order for him to get a repainting job. You know, because devotees don't want to see that. So then let the devotees think that he's sick. Better that, you know, he gets sick after Snanyatra because it was too cold, you know, and then he goes into seclusion to get well. And when he comes out, he's more bright than he was when he went in.
No, I don't want to get into it, but you said that in Anandava's Lodge Ashram, they are homosexual and it is sex and everything, but he also. It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything, but all I'm saying is that
something more.
Don't, according to the devotees who went there, it's far over the top.
Okay.
Something more.
Far over there.
More than Brahmacharyas in Maya?
I don't know. Anyway, whatever.
Whatever.
But the point is that so much for their Siddha Pranali. Where's their Shudanam? Where's their Anartha Nivritti?
I don't understand why, for example, now Bhavananda started to come back again to this
point. Let everybody come back, as long as they behave themselves like decent human beings.
Why not? Why they shouldn't come?
Okay, he can come back, but not in the position of leader. And everybody make obeisances. Homosexual, yeah?
Hare Krishna.
This is my... It's not like I try to argue to...
No, if
no,
some...
I want to understand.
If,
know,
some, if someone can... We can't eternally condemn someone.
Yeah.
If we eternally condemn someone, then there's something wrong with us.
Yeah.
If we can understand that a man has actually rectified himself
and is progressing on the straight and narrow path of at least Vaidhi Bhakti, then we can give him some facility to...
I have a question. If the person wants to come back because he made a mistake, he's supposed to be humble, no?
Yeah.
What happens if he's come back and so much false ego and starting again looking people?
Then that's his problem. He'll suffer on account of it, fall down again or whatever.
Mm. Yeah.
I doubt seriously that they're going to give him the position of acting as a Diksha Guru anytime soon.
No, they don't.
Diksha Guru,
but I see many people make
obeisances
to him.
That's just because he was a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, you know, and
he was a
they weren't there.
So what?
There is a protocol. There is some kind of etiquette, external etiquette at least. It's not
a lot of people.
It doesn't mean that someone did mistake.
You know, I am PD. You respect me.
Yes, but that's their problem.
I can take your money very easily.
That's their problem. That's their problem. You know,
if he doesn't want to offer obeisances to him,
he doesn't have to.
Okay. No. Obviously, I don't offer obeisances to anybody.
Yeah, no.
That may also not be so good.
I just want
to. Raghunath Das Goswami was offering obeisances to 1,000 Vaishnavas.
But my point is, if I really feel I have made obeisances, I don't want to be Sahaja, I don't want to be superficial.
The point is,
many times I make obeisances and people is crossing to me like, oh, garbage is there, no?
Even Chaitanya,
hey, man.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered his obeisances even to the Mayavad sannyasis. The point is, offering the obeisances is not offering the obeisances to the external shell, you know, of the psychophysical condition of a living entity.
It's
offering the basis to Paramatma.
My problem is when Krishna sees that people start looking at you in the position, you know, everything is broken.
That's their problem. It's not your problem. But you advance by offering obeisances.
Yeah, you
because Mahaprabhu sees your endeavor to respect the super soul within the heart of every living entity. You know, you should be able to offer your obeisances even to a dog.
That's supposed to be sincere obeisances.
So then, if you're not sincere, then you're not going to feel sincere regard for the super soul in the heart of every living entity. But if you are sincere and you know that the super soul is within every living entity, and you know that that jiva in its pure constitutional state is an eternal servant of Krishna, then we can respect that soul on that basis. Not that we respect the soul for whatever little psychophysical idiosyncrasy is about him, or disrespect him for that even. We may respect him from a distance, just because we know that he has an exploitive tendency or something.
Okay.
So then, but still.
This time, no problem, especially if I don't want to talk. Because I feel, my heart is very emotional, and I feel very bad when people just using this kind of...
Exploiting position.
Manipulation.
Stuff, you know.
No,
so exploitation.
I'm coming in Nippon to develop Krishna Bhakti.
But offering obeisances to every tree and every insect is not going to stop you from...
Insect is perfect. With tree and insect, I don't have a problem.
So just regard them as trees and insects. You know, at least give them that much credit. Even they may be worse than snakes, but at least, you know, scorpions or whatever. But an offering of obeisance to anyone and everyone. You know, Mahaprabhu sees that you're trying to practice the principle of humility. And even though they may be abuses, even though, just like Rishabhdev walked the world with equal vision as a Paramahamsa, but people were throwing stool on him and passing urine on him and spitting on him and this and that, you know, did he care? No, he didn't care. Whatever, you know, hari bol, see? He knows later. You get your just deserves. If they do aparad to another living entity by trying to abuse or misuse or exploit or condescendingly disempower you in some way or another, then that's their problem. They'll have to suffer the result of that. And, you know, but still, we offer respectful obeisances to the super soul in their heart, because after all, it is the super soul in the heart which has arranged the wanderings of every living entity into the purview of our consciousness. So our consciousness has perceived that this living entity has come before me, all due respects. There's a difference between giving credit and giving respects. Mm-hmm. You give credit where credit is due. But you can respect every living entity. You see my point?
But the other is making, so
don't think in those terms, because if you're trying to equate respect with giving credit, then we may not give much credit to anyone, but at least we can respect them for being part and parcel of Krishna, and actually an eternal servant of Krishna, seeing them in terms of their ultimate destination, instead of seeing them in terms of their particular idiosyncratic material entanglement. If we see their faults, then we become responsible for their foolishness. But if we see the good in them, what is the good? The good is that they're part and parcel of the Super Soul, you know, or part and parcel of Krishna. That's the good in every living entity. So we can respect them for that good at least.
Then we will advance.
And then we advance, because we've seen the absolute truth, instead of seeing some relative.
Then we respect the truth.
then we're actually respecting the truth about that living entity. Whatever misconceptions are abounding about his own idea about himself, then the Hari will adjust by stepping aside this way or that way and let him play his little Ishwara game or whatever until he comes to grips with the true essence of his existence as a minute infinitesimal being humble enough to admit it. But we should be careful, at least, not to take the position of being the judge of everyone else. Because, in certain respects, who are we to second-judge other people's motivations? You know?
Yes.
They may be sincere in their own right, at least, some way. Whether their right is absolutely right or not is another thing. But
we cannot judge.
Yeah, because judge not, lest thou be judged.
Be very simple.
But, you know, I used to always keep peacock feather. The fact of the matter is that there's several scriptures, even there's two or three places in Chaitanya Bhagavat where Srivast Thakur is seeing Lord Chaitanya with a peacock feather, and Rari Gupta is seeing Lord Chaitanya with a peacock feather, and the only one known writing of Advaita Acharya in two shlokas, he's describing his personal meditation on Lord Chaitanya as having a peacock feather jauntily cocked over his left ear. So it is not that there's no precedent for the idea of Lord Chaitanya wearing a peacock feather. Gaur Mahaprabhu, Gaur Sundara, wearing a peacock feather over his left ear on his mukut. So, you know.
We can bring an offering.
Where's the yellow rodeo also?
I have no problem putting a peacock feather. Gaur Govinda Maharaj and his disciples generally want to say that anyone who puts a peacock feather on Lord Chaitanya must be a Gauranga Nagari. So then, do you mean to say that Advaita Acharya was a Gauranga Nagari? Was Srivast Thakur a Gauranga Nagari? Was
Gauranga Nagari? Gauranga Nagari means we don't accept Allah and Krishna, we just accept Mahaprabhu
as the paramour.
Huh?
The lover, the amante.
But, so then I just turned the tables around 380 degrees. By saying that if Advaita Acharya and Srivast Thakur and Murari Gupta, because they see Lord Chaitanya wearing a peacock feather, that they are Gauranga Nagaris, then what's wrong with being a Gauranga Nagari? Ad absurdum.
Hare
Krishna.
Thank you.
We'll come back. Someday, before we leave, can you talk about book distribution to us, to inspire us? We're going to...
Did I go back? Europe. Where? Europe?
Barcelona. We live in Barcelona.
That's in Spain.
Yes.
Let's see what I can muster up.
Please.
It's been a long time since I've been out on the battlefield. Yes. Or at least that battlefield. Uh-huh. I've been on other battlefields.
Okay.
You know, enough of it, probably.
When you're talking in Mayapur, it's pretty nice for us.
To get a maggot.
Yeah.
You're talking in Mayapur? I'm talking very... It's very inspirational.
Maybe I can read a little bit of my book that I'm writing.